Hello and welcome to Mundo Albiceleste's first podcast. And we'd like to talk about Argentina. Yeah, you guessed. And for that, I'm with John from Malaysia. And after he introduces a little bit himself, we'll talk about how we met, how we start with Mundo Albiceleste, and then we'll start talking about football, which is what you like to hear. So I would like to welcome John from Malaysia. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. A very big welcome to everybody. This is another milestone for us at Mundo Albiceleste to have our very own podcast show, and we are really excited here. And it's our first podcast. We are very excited to have our readers, whom will be our listeners for this moment. And we are really excited about this. I'm really excited.
Yeah, and this all started when back in 2006. Let me tell you a little bit about myself. I'm a sports journalist. I was born and raised in Argentina, but I was working in Italy at the time when I logged into Soccernet and I saw that they were looking for a correspondent for each and every one of the nations that had qualified for the last World Cup, the 2006 in Germany. So they were looking for correspondence, and I decided to send an email with a text that they needed to read, and then they picked me as a correspondent for Argentina, and it all started from there. I decided to open an email account to see if I had some feedback, and the response was incredible. I never knew that. I mean, I knew the national team of Argentina was very popular, especially in Asia, but I guess I never expected such a response. And I had more than 100 people writing to me in only 1 week. And then after the World Cup, I decided to open a blog, which was called Vamos Argentina, and then we changed it to Mundo Albiceleste. And one of the most fanatic readers that we had was this guy from Malaysia that I never knew before, and but I was reading all his comments, and he shows such an enthusiasm and incredible knowledge about everything coming from Argentina in regards of football and other sports, and so I decided to invite him, and that person of course is John. And he started writing for Vamos Argentina, then Mundo Albiceleste, to these days. So, what is your take on these initial years of Mundo Albiceleste, John?
Well, all I can say is that when I first got to know this blog called Vamos Argentina, I felt, wow, this is an interesting thing because for me to talk about Argentina here in Asia, it's a very odd story because for most of the football fans here in Malaysia especially, we follow the English Premier League religiously. And the England national team is like an adopted national team for most of the football fans here in Malaysia. And being an Argentina fan, sometimes I'm always like out of the box. And it's always not easy to find another fan to talk about my favorite team, about my players. So when I discovered this blog, I was very excited. I was always giving my opinions, putting comments there. And while I realized that the blog was also expanding from football to other sports, it was a great moment for me to talk about anything I want to talk about Argentina. Things that I don't really talk that much to most of my friends around here. And when the opportunity came for me to be a writer for this blog, well, at first I was a bit doubt whether can I come up with something good or no. But as time went by, I'm very used to it. And in fact, it's something that I would say kind of like a second job for me, even though I'm not getting paid for it. But it's all about the passion. It's all about being very enthusiastic about to talk about Argentina. And I can tell you, this is one of the best things I've done in my life, and I've never looked back on it.
Okay, John, so you're going to be happy because all we'll do here in this podcast is you guessed. talk about Argentina. So my suggestion is we start talking right away about what's going on here. The national team is training as we speak. We are recording this on a Wednesday morning in Argentina, and we like to give you this this podcast so you could listen to it as a preview of our match on Saturday, Diego Maradona's debut as the manager of the official day of Argentina at home on Saturday against Venezuela. And the first thing I would like to say is that the expectation to see the team, to be around the team at every opportunity, it's really showing because on Tuesday training session, we had a couple of fans invading the training pitch, which was something which is something that never happened before. And so the fans were desperate to shake hands with with their idols, and security the security personnel had had a really really busy day. And then the tickets for the game, they started selling the tickets for the game on Wednesday as we speak. And so we don't have figures as the how many tickets were sold, but they were saying that the expectation is that they will sell out. So this is despite a rise of 35% in the price compared to the last home game against Uruguay. So also the media are really, really interested in this. There were more than 200 journalists yesterday just to watch the training, and they're waiting to see whether there are news regarding the lineup. This is something that, of course, is interesting for all of us. And what everyone is reporting in the media, in the local media, and Maradona said it in a very controversial TV show that we'll talk about that a little bit later. Maradona said maybe a month ago, he said that he would like to play the three little guys up front. That is Tevez. He will use Tevez on the left, Messi on the right, and Agüero in the middle as the striker. And this is having the media talking about it. They're all over it. It's like the main topic recently. And as you saw on Mundo Albiceleste, I started another poll, and so we're also collecting your votes on on this. But I'm gonna ask John about this. Do you think these three little guys can play together up front? Is it a good tactic or a good lineup for Argentina?
Okay, about the match, I would like to say a few things. I can understand how excited the fans must be in Argentina because living 1,000 miles away from there, I'm very excited as well, being Diego's first ever competitive match. Let's talk
Excuse
about
me,
the.
John. Excuse me, John.
Sure.
Excuse me, but you live more than 1,000 miles away from Argentina. But that's okay. It's just a funny thing I wanted to
Okay, about the
add.
idea of playing our three little guys up front. Well, currently, let me tell you that as we speak, we have so far received 11 votes, and the poll says that 10 of you guys feel that it's a good idea, but two says no. Well, I have to say that I'm one of those guys who voted for the no, simply
Huh.
because, well, I have my reasons. Okay, one is that I feel that having, I mean, I have nothing against these three little guys. I mean, they are full of tricks in their bags, very skillful players. But I just kind of feel that we need that out-and-out striker. We need that hitman in the middle. And I keep asking myself, where is the likes of Cavinegi or Higuain? And I was hoping that when the lineup came out, maybe Lisandro Lopez would have occupied that position. But turns out to be that he won't be in the starting lineup. But if I look at this team overall compared to what Venezuela can offer, I am very confident to say that 3 points is in the bag, definitely.
Well, yeah, that's one point I wanted to touch. And if we were talking about Brazil or Paraguay in front of us on Saturday, I would have also voted for the no, because I think you need a more physical presence if you want to beat those teams. But on the other hand, this is Venezuela, and no disrespect for them. I think by using three of the world-class players that we have and put them all together is sending a message right away. It's telling Venezuela, okay, you're coming to Buenos Aires. We're gonna attack you from the start. We're gonna use all our skill, and we don't care if we don't have a big man in the area, in the box to give us a little physical presence. We're gonna go with all our skills and all our speed, and you're gonna have to deal with it. And I think that's a positive message. I mean, I'm not saying that they should always play together. As you know, and a lot of our readers also know, I'm a big fan of Diego Milito, and I think he has showed over the years that he is an incredible striker, and he's really, really underrated. And they don't even talk about him here in Argentina. But if you go to Italy and or if you see how many goals he scored over the last few seasons, everywhere he played, I think he should be our first choice up front as a number nine, as a hitman. But on the other hand, I'm for this particular match, it's not the same if you play Agüero, Tevez, and Messi. It's not the same for Venezuela that, as you get as like if you were playing Diego Milito, because for the same reasons I was just talking about. He's underrated, and Diego Milito is underrated, and that is for something. And if a player is underrated, it means he's not as popular, and he will probably won't be able to strike fear into the opposition on the same level as the other three will do. So I voted for yes, and I'm still thinking it's a good thing for these three to play together. But if we're going to Paraguay, or if we're hosting Brazil here in Buenos Aires, I don't think I'm going to be so confident with these three little guys up front.
I think about Diego Milito, it's very surprised to see that he doesn't get the kind of recognition for the national team that he gets at club level. When we talk about strikers, how do we measure a striker? We measure by the number of goals he scored. And I feel Diego Milito has done more than just enough to justify himself that he is a good striker, that he does score goals. And I just hope that at this point of time, while I'm speaking to you, Seba, that Maradona is listening and say, you know what, let's listen to these two guys, give him a chance, you know?
Yeah, we're probably gonna have to have someone to translate into Spanish if Diego is listening. But anyway, I got your point. And also, what I would like to point out about Diego Milito is how many chances did he have in the past? I don't think there were many. And on the same hand, he played 45 minutes against Chile, and he was the best player in the first half. And he was replaced for the start of the second half. This was Basile's last game in charge, and it was one horrible performance as a team, not only individuals. But before that, if we talk about the Copa America, he played one game, he scored. What else? And then for the next game, Basile replaced him again. So I'm thinking I'll be fine if they don't play him, but I would like Diego Milito to get a chance, play three, four games in a row, because I think the bottom line and the most important thing is, at the end of the day, we're gonna need a big striker sometime. I don't know if maybe these three little guys will have a great game and will work together perfectly, and Diego will decide to start them for every game, and I'll be fine with that as long as we play nice and we win. But then there could be that there is one game that you need a bigger presence up front, or one of the three guys up front is not up, it's not available. So you need to try other options, and you need and a striker is built on confidence. If they don't have any confidence, that's it. They're not going to score. And also, just changing a little bit the angle here. We're talking about this formation with three little guys up front, but this is happening for a reason, right? This is something Maradona is being forced to do. And why am I saying this? Because we don't know if Diego was going to be ready to play three up front, and also this certain little guy, this certain guy behind them. And of course, I'm talking about Riquelme. Diego had Riquelme in mind for these games. Riquelme was on on Diego's plans. But then, as you all know, he resigned. Riquelme resigned from a national team, and that changed the whole situation. So, what is your opinion on this, John?
Well, all I can say is that being from Malaysia, we were probably one of the very earliest fans of Argentina to see Riquelme play so well in Argentina jersey. And if you are wondering what I'm referring to, it was in the 97 World Youth Cup, which was hosted by us in Malaysia. We saw that generation of players, the likes of Riquelme. Around him, he had Pablo Aimar, Esteban Cambiaso, Leo Franco. We saw that generation. We were so into that team. We felt that one day this is the guy that will take us to the World Cup glory that we waited for so long. And when I felt Diego Maradona coming in as a national team coach, he couldn't have found a better mentor than anybody else in this world. A man who has been there before, done that, telling this guy how it should be done. And to be honest with you, I'm very disappointed with Roman's decision. I felt that if he was a man enough, he should have been up for the challenge that was given to him by Diego. Because at the end of the day, for example, let's talk about the 1986 World Cup team. I can name some of the players there just spontaneously. I mean, I may not know their position or numbers, but I can name a few players from that team just like that, because simple, they were World Cup winners. And if Riquelme, if he wanted to be a part of that kind of team, the only thing that he needs to do is take up the challenge that was given to him by Diego, go out there and win the World Cup. He will be remembered forever. I'm, sad to say, but sometimes, some people, I mean, I guess it's a human being nature, they are just not up for the challenge. They rather live in their comfortable box and don't care about the rest.
Well, yeah, and there is also there are a couple of things. I don't want to talk a lot about Riquelme. It's kind of old news now, and I think I'm on the same page as the Argentine the national team players that have arrived in Buenos Aires, and all said they were all saying, okay, it's Riquelme's decision. We cannot do anything about it. So we need to turn the page and move on. We have to deal with this, and that's the only thing we can do. So I agree with this, but just before we do that, all I wanted to say is that I feel sad about this decision. I think the only loser here is our national team, and to have a list of a squad of 23 players for the next World Cup and not have Riquelme in it, I think it's a crime, but it's okay. It's nothing we can do. There's nothing we can do about it. And another thing that really, really, I wouldn't say caused me pain, but I don't like the situation that started after Riquelme's resignation. And it was the fact to see the Boca fans singing songs against the national team, taking sides, criticizing Maradona, calling him a traitor. I don't think Diego deserves that. And I can see where they were coming from. I know they wanted to give Riquelme their full support, and even though Maradona was really important for Diego, sorry, for Boca, I think Riquelme, for most fans of Boca, was and will always be more important than Maradona. Boca with Riquelme won everything, and Diego only played 1 year for them, so it was kind of easy to understand why the Boca fans will take Riquelme's side. But what I didn't like to see was this kind of division between fans of Boca, which are also fans of Argentina, but they didn't show that. They were singing against Argentina, and that's something I blame Riquelme for, because of the way he resigned, not only because he resigned, but the way in which he resigned, by going live on television and referring to Maradona not by name, but saying, okay, the national team manager doesn't have my same work ethics, and so we cannot work together, and all sorts of things he said without mentioning Maradona. I think I don't agree with what Diego did, like going public and talking about a particular situation, but at the same time, I don't think he said anything offensive. He was the national team manager talking about football, talking about other players as well. And the minute he criticized Riquelme, even slightly, and or you can consider he was a tough critic. If you're Riquelme and you consider he was a tough critic, so what? You have been a professional for a number of years, and you have to be able to accept criticism, and then work hard and try to prove the critics wrong. That's what every player does, but not Riquelme. He's one of a kind, and I guess by the tone of my voice and by listening to what I'm saying, you know that I'm really angry about this, and I'm sad and I'm upset. But at the end of the day, we just have to turn the page and move on. We think we have the quality in our squad to achieve big things and to play beautifully even without Riquelme. So be it. That's all we can say.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you because at the end of the day, the national team is not about Riquelme, and Riquelme is part of the national team. So that statement says it all, that how important the national team is. And over the years, players come, players go, but the team is always there. And my support for the national team goes out unconditionally, regardless of who is playing, who is not. Because at the end of the day, I'm just doing what a fan should do. That's about it.
Okay, John, what do you think if we start talking a little bit about team news and some speculation regarding our lineup and some other information about this coming game? I will start by saying that, of course, Martin De Michelis is suspended. So, as you know, he became a key part of our defense, and he's having a great season for Bayern Munich. And I'm feeling really happy for him because I remember when he missed out on the World Cup squad for Germany 2006. He was so happy because the World Cup was coming to Germany, and he was living there. So he felt it was his opportunity to show the world what he could do, and then to miss out on the last announcement. It was a huge blow for him, and he even said that he wanted to kill himself. That was how bad he was feeling. But then he started working hard, and he continued to play for Bayern Munich, and he took his second chance, and he started playing, I would say, quite brilliantly for Argentina. He's very solid at the back, and I again know this. No disrespect for Venezuela, but I think I'm glad this is Venezuela we're facing without him, because I would be a little bit more concerned if he was another arrival. What do you think about the Michelis and whether we're going to miss him or not for this game, John?
Don't forget one more thing about Demichelis. He has been scoring goals lately, quite consistently, if I may recall. And
Yeah,
I'm
and
all.
he's been also, sorry to interrupt, but he's been also playing in midfield recently. And I remember the Demichelis when he arrived in Germany, he also played in midfield, and that's what I like about him, because if you have a situation in which you need to push a little harder, you can always take him from the back and put him in midfield and without making any substitutions. He's the kind of player that can play in many positions and do it with the same consistency. So that's what I wanted to say, and that's why I interrupt you, but please continue.
Well, all I can say is that Demichelis he's a crucial part of the national team because I'm not so sure what is Diego's tactic is. If he's gonna play four defenders at the back, I will be the most happiest person to see him and Walter Samuel at that position. Two players who missed out the last World Cup and are making a comeback for 2010. I'm sure knowing both of these players, that is the most biggest motivation they can ever get. To go out there and prove it this time, something which they missed it out the last time. So Seba, I mean, have you discovered what could be the most likeliest formation? Because the last time I recall, it was 3-3-1-3.
So that one you had there was supposed to be Riquelme, right? Three,
Yep.
you said 3-3-1-3, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll get rid of that playmaker, that number, that one over there that is traditionally, the number 10 in Argentina, as we call it, because I think it's going to be a 3-4-3. I think we're going to need a little bit more defensive presence in midfield. We'll have Gago and Mascherano, that's for sure, and we need to see the other players that are going to be playing in midfield. I'm betting for Jonas Gutierrez. And Maxi Rodriguez. That's my gamble. But also, we need to know who's going to be playing at the back. And at the moment, it looks like it's going to be a back line of three players. But we need to see who is going to be playing their defense. We know that the Michelis is out, and there is a chance for a couple of players from our domestic league, Angeleri, Gastón Angeleri from Estudiantes, and also Juan Forlín, who's playing for Boca, of course. So it's kind of a question mark over who's going to be playing there, and who's going to be the man in the middle, you know, the sweeper, the one who's going to be the last man, the first one ahead of the goalkeeper, if you know what I'm talking about. And there's also doubts over who's going to be playing in that line of three defenders, who's going to be playing in the right slot, because there are a few possibilities, and every one of these players offer different things to Diego. So it depends on whether he wants to go with a more solid defensive unit, or whether he decides to have someone like Zanetti who can always join the attack. But I don't think it's going to be the case of a defender joining in the attack for this particular game, because we have a lot of presence up front. And so I'm thinking Heinze, he will play for sure, and he has experience playing with three at the back. He could play as a left back and as a central defender, And you know, I don't like him a lot, but it gets better when he plays more a central role rather than out on the left. So I wouldn't complain if Heinze is one of the three starters. So I'm thinking Heinze, and I'm thinking Zanetti on the right. And there's also Daniel Diaz, you know, Cata Diaz, he plays for Getafe. Juan Forlín, Angeleri. We're gonna have to wait and see during the week and whether Diego decides for three of them. And then if Diego decides to play with four at the back, well, it's gonna be Zanetti at right back. And but then I'm concerned because there aren't many central defenders available. Okay, Walter Samuel is in the squad, but he has a muscular fatigue, so there are doubts whether he's going to be available or not. So then Heinze will be the other central defender, and then as a left back, it could be Emiliano Papa from Vélez. He played in the first two friendlies with Diego, and that would be a line of four. But I think he's gonna play with three, then Gago and Mascherano in central midfield, and Jonas Gutierrez and Maxi Rodriguez are my picks as wide midfielders. So it's not looking bad. And of course, Carrizo is gonna be the goalkeeper.
Okay, my pick on the midfield, most likely on the left. If I had to say, I would prefer to have Di Maria because I saw him at the Olympics. He was very outstanding. On the right, without a doubt, Maxi Rodriguez. To me, I think that right position belongs to him. I would not think twice or even three times to give it to anyone else. To me, he's the best in the world at that moment in that position. The central midfield, without a doubt, Fernando Gago and Javier Mascherano. Reminds me a lot of back in USA 94 when Redondo and Simeone was playing in that same role. Very exciting, interesting prospect to see from these two guys.
Yeah, that's a good comparison. But I think these two work together even better than Simeone and Redondo did. And but yeah, Gago and Redondo are very similar. There are comparisons between them ever since Gago started playing for Boca. And but what if Maradona decides to play three at the back without using Zanetti as a defender, and he uses Zanetti as a right midfielder? And puts Maxi on the bench.
I would be a little bit surprised, but then again, Zanetti also has abundance of ability to go in the offense, so it would not matter that much. And considering the fact as you're playing against Venezuela, I don't see that will be much of an issue there.
And also, this could be the case in which Maradona said, "Okay, I'm gonna take some risk. I'm gonna be playing three at the back, even without much practice, and even if it's the first time these three defenders play together. But at least I'm gonna be playing someone like Zanetti on the right midfield, someone who we all know he can defend. So I can ask him. Oh, I can always ask him to stay in defense, and he could eventually become the fourth defender, and at times Argentina could switch between three and four at the back. I don't think it's a bad option, and I wouldn't be very surprised if Diego does. That said, I believe he's gonna use Zanetti at the back and Maxi Rodriguez in midfield. So let's talk a little bit about Venezuela. There's a I posted an article on Mundo Albiceleste last week, and there's an interesting thing happening here, and something that could work both ways around, if you allow me to say that, because Venezuela is bringing 10 under 20 players. And what happens when you have a lot of youth on your team? They can be very dangerous because they don't feel much pressure. They say, okay, we're young, we are not favorites here. If we lose, nobody will say anything. Nobody will criticize us very hard. They're coming with such an incredible amount of confidence because in January and February, while Batista's boys were really struggling and they got knocked out and that they couldn't qualify for the World Cup in Egypt, Venezuela were going the opposite direction. They became the first team from Venezuela to qualify for a World Cup, for a FIFA World Cup in any category. So these guys, not only they are good, but they're coming with a lot of confidence, and they are already heroes in Venezuela. Everyone sees them as heroes. So I'm not saying I'm concerned, but I wouldn't be surprised if for some moments during the game, these guys just dedicate themselves to pass the ball around, play without any pressure, and causing some troubles to Argentina. On the other hand, of course, when you have a lot of youth on your team, they can break down under the pressure. They will play away from home, maybe for the first time in their careers, and they will play in front of a capacity crowd at the Monumental. Maradona will be in front of them. They're going to have to defend Messi. They're going to have to play against Tevez. It's not going to be easy for them. It's going to be something really interesting to see whether they stand up for the challenge and they have a great game, or whether they collapse completely and they break down in front of 80,000 or 70,000.
Well, I can understand. I can see where Venezuela is coming from. I believe that their main intention here, it's no longer about the World Cup qualifying. It's more or less for the Under-20 World Cup. They want to give their young players the best possible exposure they can give. And what can you say? I mean, playing the Monumental, 80,000 in front of you, Diego Maradona on the side. It's a dream, probably for any footballer in this world, starting in his career, to be in that position, you know. And for these players from Venezuela, I guess they are more on the learning zone. They are trying to absorb as much as experience as possible from a match like this and take it with them to Egypt and see what they can do with it. But on top of that, I also have to agree with you because we don't even know how much that many info about these players, about what they are capable of. So there is a danger there. Furthermore, you know, you're talking about young players, full of enthusiasm, full of energy, and those kind of things. You know, it could be a danger for us because our players are traveling from one continent to another. You know, match fitness could be questionable and those kind of things. So yes, I will still say Argentina needs to be cautious about it. But pound to pound, I believe we have to win this game. No doubt.
Yeah, and if we do that, we're gonna be just doing what the history tells us to do, because we have never dropped any points against Venezuela in history. But this Venezuelan side is not the same as the teams from the past. They have already won three matches in this World Cup qualifier campaign. And they're not the wee boys of the continent anymore. They are way better than Peru or Bolivia when they play away from home. So it's not going to be as easy as everyone expects. But I guess a lot will depend on whether we can score in the first 15 minutes to settle down, to put the pressure on Venezuela and go from there. So let's talk a little bit about how the standings are looking so far. And I have to start with Paraguay. They have been really impressive under Gerardo Martino, an Argentine manager. They have won 7 of the 10 games, and they're looking really comfortable in the standings. They are 6 points ahead of Brazil, 7 points ahead of Argentina and Chile. They are all but qualified. I'm really, really an admirer of this Paraguayan side. They can score at will. They are really tight at the back. It's gonna be probably our most difficult game from here to the end of this campaign when we have to visit Paraguay in the future. So you have Paraguay up top of the standings, and then you have Brazil only 1 point ahead of Argentina and Chile. Chile, another surprise with another Argentine manager, Marcelo Bielsa. I think they have the structure to make it to the World Cup, and they're fighting Uruguay. They're 3 points ahead of Uruguay for that all important fourth spot, and it's going to be interesting to see how Chile reacts in the next few games. They have a they're traveling to Peru. They're going to play on Sunday, and there is a history, a tradition of a huge rivalry between Peru and Chile, so it's gonna take a little extra from Chile to win this game. Even though Peru are bottom on the standings and have only won one game, so that game is gonna be interesting to see. And also Uruguay on Saturday hosting Paraguay. That's another game I want to see, and I think if Paraguay wins that one, they're gonna go 13 points ahead of fifth ahead of Uruguay, which are at the fifth spot so far. So with 13 points of advantage, that gap will be impossible to close, and I think Paraguay can virtually qualify for the next World Cup as soon as on Saturday. So what are your takes on this situation, John?
Well, the Uruguay-Paraguay match sounds to me more like a Serie A match. Both teams are well, very defensive-minded, if I'm not wrong. I'm actually very surprised with Paraguay because somehow or other, they are not a one-of-a-kind team from South America. And correct me if I'm wrong, Seba, but I believe that one of their main strengths in the team is that they do not speak the Spanish language when they communicate each other on the field. Am I right about that?
Some of the players they speak in Guarani, which is the Guarani, the original language from that region. And yeah, I don't know whether that plays a part or not. Maybe they feel more connected by speaking in that language. But I think the main thing is that they are really really, really very difficult to score on, to score against, sorry. They're really tight at the back. They have the experience, and they have the power up front as well, with Aedo Valdés, with Roque Santa Cruz, with a strong midfield. They're not that's surprising to me. Of course, you always expect Brazil and Argentina to be top of the standings, but both have experienced difficulties, and for Brazil, it's very hard for Dunga to work in Brazil, and their home form has been have left a lot to be desired, and they struggle to score at home at some point. And the pressure they play under when they have the Maracana full of supporters that they all want to win 7-0 within the first 10 minutes, and if they can't score, the pressure is on them rather than on the other team. So, but at the same time, I think the three of them, Paraguay, Brazil, and Argentina, we'll all go to the World Cup, and I have little doubts about it. And I think it's going to be interesting to see that week in September when we have to face, on the 5th of September, we host Brazil, and 3 days later, we travel to Paraguay. I think that's the point where we either make or break, because there will only be two remaining fixtures after those clashes against Brazil and Paraguay for us. And I'm crossing my fingers that we're going to get to that double fixtures in early September with at least some difference with the teams behind us in the table, because otherwise it's going to be really, really nervy for me and for everyone.
Also, an interesting game, I think, is the Colombia-Bolivia match. I believe both teams will be desperate to collect 3 points because looking at the standings, Colombia is at 8th place, Bolivia is at 11th place. So, if either one who wins this match, I mean, those who lose, they could be in for trouble to miss out on the World Cup. So, that'll be another interesting fixture to look forward.
Especially because they will play after Paraguay and Uruguay. So if Paraguay beats Uruguay, Colombia will reach the 5th spot, because they will get to 14 points, and Paraguay will and Uruguay, sorry, will remain on 13. So it's going to be crucial for Uruguay this week, and they will be hoping for Bolivia to beat. To beat Colombia, but I don't think it's going to happen, especially in Colombia. But Colombia, they're having troubles to score. They are a good team, but they're not scoring enough goals, and that's something. I mean, after 10 matches, they have only scored 4 goals. I mean, that's not enough for a team that wants to go to the World Cup. And two of those goals were against Argentina, if you remember, when we visited them, and Carlitos Tevez got sent off,
Yeah.
and after that, right after that, Messi scored a great goal, but then Colombia came back from behind and scored two of their 4 total goals in the World Cup qualifiers in that particular game against us. So they need to improve their scoring form. Because on defense they're doing quite well. They have only conceded eight goals in 10 matches. So they need to start firing a little bit better. But yeah, it's gonna be interesting. And also, let me tell our readers that we're gonna have another podcast on next week. And we hope you like this first edition that we're doing. Of course, there are plenty of mistakes and stuff we will need to improve, but we're confident we'll do it. And we're gonna have a podcast early next week, just to recap what happened on Saturday between Argentina and Venezuela, and as a preview of our dangerous visit to Bolivia, which is gonna happen on the 1st of April. So, before we finish this podcast today, we would like to extend an invitation to you, and send us emails, or even you can even comment on our comments box on Mundo Albiceleste, and tell us what would you like to hear, what would you like us to discuss, if there is a particular player you like to talk about. If there is one favorite player of yours that is being ignored by Diego in this initial squad that he named, or anything you like to share with us. If you're a fan of Argentina, living really far from Argentina, and have an interesting story to tell, you could always come and join us here in the podcast, and we'll have a chat, an interview, or whatever you like to call it. And we are welcome to you'll be welcome to join us, and it'll be great for us and for other and for all the readers to hear these interesting stories you have to tell. So, John, give us an email address where our readers can write us to ask for these kind of things in our future podcasts.
Okay, our email address is argentina.correspondent@gmail.com. I repeat, argentina.correspondent@gmail.com. Please write to us. We want to hear from you guys. You guys are our main asset. You know, that we appreciate all the comments that we have been getting, all your opinions, and we'd like to hear more of them from you.
And also, this is something I wanted to talk about. I still haven't heard from Juan Pablo Sorín. I sent him all the questions you sent, and I sent him two emails, but I still haven't heard from him. We're gonna have to be patient and see if we have any luck with him in the future. This is all we had in store for you today. I hope you have enjoyed this first edition of our podcast, and I hope you start sending your suggestions and your ideas to help us improve this pod and make it a regular feature in our blog in Mundo Albiceleste. So that's all for from us. So thank you, John. Bye bye.
Bye-bye.
And of course, a big Vamos Argentina for Saturday. Okay.
Yep, vamos Argentina.